Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is Questions of the Force. We get questions from listeners, and we get answers, sometimes from our souls, and sometimes from the internet. And hopefully, the two can mix. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsuck. Just happy to be here today. There's a lot of pressure on us to answer these questions now, I guess. But I'm excited to be answering the cues of the Force.
Yeah, I just distracted myself with combining internet with souls. It's like the truth is sometimes we answer from the heart of what these questions are, and then sometimes we double check answers. And then yeah. I just started imagining some sort of weird Frankenstein's monster story where some mad scientist is like, I can put my soul into the internet.
It's so funny though. You're making me think of the many years now. We're in like our seventh year of doing this. And how there's times where I'm like, I don't know, I'll just press record and see what comes into my brain, and how I've moved so far away from that because I can't remember half the things I see in Star Wars anymore. So I do sit down and Frankenstein it all together.
I Frankenstein it together. So let's see what our internet souls have to say today. First, we want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Android Kindle or MP3 player or any other device that you can make play an audiobook. This week, we are continuing to recommend a book that we did a very deep dive into last week, and that is Shadow of the Sith by Adam Christopher. Adam Christopher was very kind to retweet our deep dive into Shadow of the Sith and be very kind about the review. So if you're curious about the book and the review, you can, of course, listen to both. If you want to listen to the book, you can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/4center. One more time, audibletrial.com/4center, free audiobook. Ken, any thoughts?
I know it's always fun to, you know, get any kind of attention from someone that created any part of Star Wars. We appreciate that. No lie there. But it was particularly fun that Adam Christopher actually took to our David Bowie jokes and David Bowie references. That just, you know, tugged on my music loving heart.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was a real honest compliment of the book that don't want to spoil it. A very pulpy scene at the end reminded me of the title of a David Bowie song, and you sung a couple of fake bars. And all weekend, I have had a song that doesn't exist stuck in my head. I've had an earworm, and again, don't want to spoil it, so I'm not going to sing it. But
wait a minute. So yeah. I, no joke, yesterday out in the backyard with the Chihuahuas was singing the song we made up. Maybe we should go into songwriting or David Bowie cover band songwriting stuff. I don't know. That's hilarious you say that.
Yeah, it's and maybe there is some tune that you sang it to that exists that's very deep in my soul and the internet. Who knows? Anyway, point is, Shadow of the Sith, we enjoyed it. We talked about it a lot. Give it a listen. Apparently some real interesting choices in the audiobook that some followers and Twitter friends let us know about, that there's some fun voice accent choices. So check out the audiobook Shadow of the Sith. All right, we are going to move on to our actual question, our cues of the Force. We have two from Twitter and two from our patrons on Patreon. And I'm going to say right away, hey, if you like Jawas, boy, is this episode for you. We had two great Jawa questions, and I put them both in. We're starting with Jawas. We're going to Twitter, and this is from Twitter user Hegason1. Hegason says, love the show, you three. Quick question. Do you think the Jawas just turn up randomly with their droids, or have you got to book in a slot? Side thought, do you think Obi was up on his cliff watching when R2 and 3PO arrived? Maybe he force snipes R5-D4 to set things in motion. Hegason, of course, referring to the bad motivator that allows R2 to be purchased by Luke and Owen. And the fact that Obi-Wan at least did at one point have a cave that kind of overlooked things. Seems like he moved out, but who knows? The story of Star Wars is always in motion. Ken, let's go first to just the big picture. How do you buy things from a Jawa? What do you think is the actual setup?
I think Jawas can be booked if you know one like Tika. Mm-hmm. Like, if you have that relationship, like Pelimoto can definitely book some Jawas to come on by, either pick up, sell. I think if you know your way around, you treat them right. You know, now Tika, it's a little bit of a give and take, and maybe he takes more than he gives, but, you know, I think there's some respect there. I think he understands it. Pelimoto, you know, we know there's some history there, so they're going to have a different view of her. I think that's one of the key things. But I think in general, it's not unlike, I don't know how it is wherever you are living, where you're listening to this podcast, but in LA, LA County, it's not unlike putting metal items on your front lawn and then magically a shady dude with a pickup truck shows up and grabs it. Happens all the time. It's amazing. I think that's kind of how I view the Jawas. They're there, but if you need them, you got to form a relationship with them.
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly make a Jawa appear just by, you know, leaving any equipment out and they'll take it, right? So there's mm-hmm. the Jawa collection.
Yeah.
But then the Jawa purchase of like, I need a droid, right? Going back to that scene in Star Wars, A New Hope, I think the main thing that I think of is Owen and Luke seem aware that they're coming, right? Like maybe there's some deleted version of the script that shows us how Owen and Luke become aware, or how far in advance are they aware that mm-hmm. there's going to be an option to purchase droids. So that's where I start, is Owen and Luke seem aware. The question is, are they aware, like Hegason is asking? Like, it's the third Thursday of the month.
Mm-hmm.
the Jawas make their rounds to all the moisture farms and they're going to be out there? Or is it like that they set this up, right? Is there like flares, right? That Owen sends off a flare and I'm ready to make a purchase, you know, or do the Jawas send up flares that like, hey, we'll be around tomorrow afternoon. And it is like just a flare shot up into the sun on Tatooine that is kind of the Jawa version of like a giant gorilla balloon for a furniture sale of like something large so everyone can see a purchase opportunity is coming. Or is it not that much of advance warning at all? Is it really just like this is a part of the day that at, you know, high noon, you use the macro binoculars and you look out and you see if they're coming. And final thought on this, what I want it to be, I don't think it's this, but what I want it to be is that sand crawlers are like ice cream trucks and they play a little song.
I like that.
And it just echoes through the sandy dunes of Tatooine. And is it that Owen knew for like a month that this is their regular time? Did he see a sign, a flare go up the night before? Or was he just finishing grumping about his breakfast, just pulling on his robes, and he heard the ice cream truck noise? Like, I need a droid.
I need a new droid for the binary load lifter or the moisture evaporator. I love this. First of all, speaking to what we were saying earlier, like going with the soul or looking on the internet, I was trying to research my thoughts here, put them all in order, but I forgot. As you were discussing this question, Joseph, as a kid, I did assume exactly what you described, that it was like a Thursday and it was like part of the rotation. It was just part of life on Tatooine. The job was go out and collect stuff. If you're going to need them, you can't go to town easily. They come to you. As a 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old, that's just kind of what I assumed.
Yeah. And it kind of seemed like, they've definitely been to the Hilar's homestead before and know that what the Hilar's homestead might be interested in is droids, right? So they march the droids out. They're not showing any other really wares, you know? And one of the small moments in that scene and in New Hope that I just love is it seems like they have a relationship and they are these kind of traveling used car salesmen, because when the motivator, the bad motivator goes off and no one's like, hey, what are you trying to pull here? And that Jawa goes, like the little shoulder just like, what do you want from me?
You bought it.
it broke after you bought it. Maybe you did something wrong, Owen. I feel like that's what that Jawa was saying.
Which could make that Jawa Tika. That could be Tika.
If it was Tika who said, wah, that would be extremely thrilling to me. I totally agree with you with Tika. I think Tika is an entirely different thing. Like, I think maybe it's, you know, sort of bias of the way that I perceived the Jawas, but it seems like this is their deal. Certain sand crawlers, certain communities of Jawas are like, this is our territory, these moisture farms around this area, and we roll on the first Thursday of the month to each one, or each one is on a certain day or whatever. And this is basically like, you don't have to come to our superstore. We'll bring our superstore to you. But Tika's like, it so fits with Obi-Wan hiding, but it also fits with Obi-Wan being a little bit more, you know, elegant and precise, that he's hired a private shopper. He's gone out and he's found like a Jawa who is, you know, rolls with his sandcrawler and saying like, no, I don't want you to roll up with a sandcrawler and show me a bunch of random stuff. I'll give you a list and you will personally shop for me.
Yes. I love that look. Yeah. You know, it's funny. You make me think, gosh, this is truly a Jawa episode. I love that, you know, 3PO doesn't have a positive view in the short amount of time he remembers spending with them, because I'm sure he spent some more time with them between Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones. But the when they pull into Mos Eisley and he's just like, Jawas, I can't abide Jawas. Just like, calm down there, 3PO. All right. Treat some people nice. But also, you probably did enjoy your time with them. I just love the little lot of Jawa humor in A New Hope.
It really is. It's one of the things that absolutely like builds out the great world building of that very first film.
Yeah.
Let's go to the second part of Hegeson's question here. Do you think that Obi-Wan could have been involved in any way? Obviously, I think this question came in before the end of the Kenobi show, where we saw Obi-Wan making the choice to move away from the cave toward the future. And what we know will probably be the hut. So there's that element to it. There's also been lots of different R5-D4 stories of, you know, different both legends and canon of adding something more to that bad motivator. What do you think about this idea of Obi-Wan being involved in it?
It's interesting. Yeah. Trying to, you know, based on what we saw at the end of the show, he's probably not around as much, which is also part of him just kind of letting that go in a way. Luke's going to become Luke and I'll be around. But also that does kind of make sense that if he sensed any kind of, I don't even say disturbance, but just there's a ripple, I could see him kind of being around. And that's why he knows R2 rolls off later, right? Because he's right around the corner of that Krat Dragon call, right? He's he's kind of waiting. But again, he could have just sensed a ripple. And you mentioned, I struggle a little bit with the R5 story from a certain point of view, but I do think it's a great little story and it makes R5 an absolute hero. For those not super familiar with it, I won't spoil the details, but basically R5 kind of makes a decision to do this, to let R2 go on with his mission because he and R2 have spoken. And for some reason, I don't know, it's a bridge too far or something like that. I just kind of like this idea that the forces at work in a little different way. And Kenobi, to me, that at this point in his life, is kind of laying back and just kind of, I don't know, just kind of letting it happen. But I'll wrap up here, Joseph. I'm all over the map. I'm sorry. But even them, I don't know. It just say if Kenobi was there and he was kind of watching what's going on and he does have an effect on R5, you know, it almost would be like his version of messing with Watto's loaded chance cube that Qui-Gon does. Like, I got to trust the Force, but a little shove every now and then doesn't hurt.
Yeah, no, I think for me, I agree with you. There's the R5 stories where there's kind of something more to it. I personally just don't need that. I think that I'm happy with A New Hope being a story of all of these little moments of destiny came together in that great question of, is destiny just destiny, or is that, you know, what characters mean when saying follow the will of the Force, follow what happens and how it creates opportunities for other things to happen? You know, is the fact that this poor broken down droid in R5-D4 just has a bad motivator, that's destiny creating an opportunity, and 3PO takes it to upsell you know, Luke on R2. And would have 3PO tried anyway? If R5 was a great droid, would 3PO have desperately tried to be like, but don't you like the color blue? You know, and tried to upsell R2 anyway. So I'm always happy with the R5-D4 just being, it's a broken down droid and the motivator was bad. But and then kind of the more larger philosophical with Obi-Wan. Yeah, I think Obi-Wan is at that point is very aware of the swirling tides of the Force and maybe sensing that things are beginning to come together. But yeah, I think he is far away, and yeah, he senses trouble with Luke, and that's why he comes out and does the Krat Dragon call and all that. But I don't think he's in that point where he needs to set things in motion. Time is setting things in motion.
Time, yeah.
The age, the you know, how much the Empire is increasing their grasp, how much the galaxy is resisting and pushing back, how the age of Leia and Luke, that they are, you know, of the age to make choices themselves. Those are all the things that are happening. They don't need a push from Obi-Wan.
Yeah, yeah. And to dig it a little deeper, and this is maybe beyond even the question, I've always loved, and I love even more now as we get more storytelling, but when, you know, Luke's just kind of like, I don't know, this little droid says he belongs to someone named Obi-Wan Kenobi. And just that look that Kenobi shoots over at him. We all know that look where it's just like, that's changed. The context of that has changed over the years. I just love where I sit with it now, where I view that as Kenobi going, oh, bleep, it's here. We're going. Game on.
Yeah. And also just like, it's always read that of like, oh, wow. Yeah, this isn't just Luke's wandering in the desert and got into trouble. This involves me. You know, he was coming to me, what is going on with this droid? But then with like the added context of not only the prequels, but the Clone Wars animated series of like Obi-Wan knowing like, oh, if this damn droid has something in his mind that he's going to do, oh, man, this is not a Tuesday for me. This is not a Thursday, I guess, or a Friday, the day after the Jawa shopping.
Yeah,
we have more to say probably about Tika, which is great, because when we get to our Patreon section, we have another Tika question. But for now, any other questions on how you set up a time to shop with Jawas?
No, but I'm open to a standalone episode, just an hour and a half special on Disney Plus called Tika, The Life of a Jawa. And we get some of these answers. More on that later.
very much hoping for that. His entire own Lego show would be great. Thank you very much for the question, Hegason1. We're going to move on to a question from Ross Squatch. Ross begins with, warning, morbid question ahead. Ross goes on to say, do either of you have plans for your collection for when you become one with the Force? As a wise Ken once said, age becomes real for all of us. So I was curious, what will happen to the storage totes and unopened packages? Love the show. Well, this one is a timely one for me. As I was saying on the news show, I spent this past weekend in Minneapolis packing up my storage unit, my wife and I's storage unit, to bring all of the things we own to a new storage unit in Los Angeles. And yes, a lot of collections, comic books, props from all of my theater and sketch comedy days, my drums, but a lot of action figures. Looking at the sheer volume of what I have is really playing into this question of, well, they are with me for a time. But what happens when my time is up? So I wanted to give my own context that this is an extremely timely time for us to talk about this, but I want to hear your thoughts on this, Ken. What do you think about your collection and about the future and about your own mortality?
Yeah, wow. Look, and first of all, I don't even remember saying that, so thank you for that, Rusquatch. I forget when I barf out a bumper sticker idea. First thing first, I'm assuming she's going to be sad that I'm gone, but Grace will burn them all in a fire pit with no hesitation. It will be finally done. No. I'm planning on being around for a long time, force and God willing, but I am, and you and I have talked about this before, I'm starting to see my relationship to things, especially Star Wars things, change slightly. I don't buy as much, I don't consume as much, I don't collect as much, and for no great big world or political stance, I just find myself, not needing it around as much anymore. Just have a different relationship with it. But it's very, very hard for me to actually do this and do this being like part with them, separate them. Mm-hmm. I am looking more and more at a lot of my collection, wondering if it's time to move them on. Selling is a fine idea. Giving them away might even be better. But we'll see, because I mean that it's truly hard. It's because, as he said before in other episodes, this is our love, and it's in something real, tangible. It's something you can hold on to and something you can display and say, this character provided inspiration for me in a dark time, or, Han on a Tauntaun represents a part of my youth. And that's why I collect Han on Tauntaun. For collectors, it is hard. And I don't ever want to treat that lightly. I think not anyone listening doesn't. So there's a connection there. But I am realizing there is some tragic comedy in a storage shed full of plastic. Mm-hmm. What do you do with it when it's gone and when you're gone? So I'm not quite there yet, but I'm thinking about that kind of stuff more and more. So there you go, Ross. Deeper answer.
Yeah, I think for me, the value of collecting, I have moved away from collecting at various points in my life for lots of different reasons, just wanting to pare down, needing to be not have that be a part of my financial reality.
Yeah.
Lots of reasons. I've had waves of collecting. There were so many figures that I saw just briefly exploring the tip of the iceberg of the figures that I own in my storage shed. Mm. And one of them was muscle bound Power of the Force Darth Vader with the original long lightsaber from 95 that my brother's girlfriend at the time gave me for Christmas. And it was so powerful to see that Vader figure, because that's the one where the second wave of collecting started for me. That was my first Power of the Force. That's where it started, and I can look at the Force Awakens Stormtrooper I bought at Dragon Con in 2015, because that's where the new wave began again. The figures mean so much to me because I enjoy collecting them, because I enjoy having these symbols of specific ideas like you're talking about, Ken, that they represent in the show or they represent to our lives. But for me, a big part of the collecting is the moment of getting them in. Why did I get them? Who was I with? They are little symbols of these moments in my life. This weekend, when we were it back in the Midwest for the storage unit. We also bopped down to Ames, Iowa for a thing, an event for one of my wife's good friends. My wife went to high school in Ames, Iowa. And I was talking to her about, like, I want to stop at the Target in Ames, because as a kid, when I traveled anywhere, I was excited to stop at a different Target because they might have different action figures that they don't have other places.
Yeah.
And she thought this was great. And we stopped in at the Target in Ames, and they had this vintage collection, newer Rebel Hoth Soldier. Mm. And I have a relationship to that because my parents bought me the Rebel Hoth Soldier when I was a kid. I think they thought it was Luke on Hoth.
Absolutely.
And I always liked that figure and slightly resented it because I never got Hoth Luke in the original Kenner days. So I went to this Target in one of my wife's hometowns of Ames, Iowa, a real nostalgic weekend, told her this whole story. And she was like, you have to buy this one. Mm. I want this memory from this trip. I want to look at that figure and remember this.
Yeah.
So I think that to me is a part of the power of collecting, is about the moment that you got them. So to actually get back to answering Ross's question, I've really been aware for myself that I am a steward of these. I'm not going to own them forever. And that's one of the many reasons that I don't open them all, because I want someday, if for whatever reason, the Book of Boba Fett, Fennec Shand, becomes extremely rare, and 40 years from now, somebody can't believe there's still a Fennec Shand in the package.
Right.
You know, I want to be able to, you know, help with that. So I really do. I'm really aware of, I have a lot of figures, and I need to consider how I'm handling them in my own life. You know, having good storage for them, I'm thinking about ways to set up a rotating system of display so I can have some out and then cycle them so I can enjoy them more.
Yeah,
really. And just identifying places in like my apartment, like near my desk, for like, this is for the most recent figure I bought, and it stays there.
Yeah.
It gets a month of highlighted, you know.
I love that.
I recommend to myself this action figure. I jokingly suggested on a podcast, and then my wife said, I'd be willing to do that, of setting up a subscription box for myself of figures I own so that my wife could take the time to pack them up, and it would be a new discovery of like, oh, yeah.
So she'll send it. She'll drop it off at your desk. I picked six items.
Instead of like loot box, it would be like your box. You already own these things, but you get to rediscover them.
That's genius at so many levels, because how many times you and I discussed on the news show of going back to, oh gosh, I do own that. I mean, the fact that I said this on Ken Plume's Force 5 show, the fact that I bought Moff Jer Gerard from the Star Wars Saga Collection twice, not knowing I bought it the first time, I could have used U-Box.
U-Box, right? You box it up and you send it to yourself and give yourself some joy. So anyway, obviously the action figures for me are always a risk for spiraling out, talking a lot about what their value is, how to handle them in the moment. But to get to Ross's actual question, for me, it's not morbid. It is natural. Star Wars helps me process that it's natural to become one with the Force. I'm not totally at peace with it. I have a lot of anxiety. I would like to live to 100. I would like to put my brain in a computer and keep my brain going forever. I resist the natural process, but I also want to find healthy ways to try to embrace it. And in that spirit, the action figure collection for me is part of end-of-life planning of where can these go that will provide the most joy, right? Whose lives will be made better? You know, is there... will I have anyone in my life who is younger, who I know would get a lot of joy from these? Is there the right place to gift them so that they will end up finding a place of joy? I also really like the little free libraries. You know about those, Ken, right?
I do.
Those started in Minnesota, which I didn't know until recently. So there's a part of me is like, well, maybe that's something I should try to do, is start a little free toy chest initiative where you're just walking down the street and people have little toy boxes you can open up and you can discover them there. So, yeah, I think for me, I haven't decided yet what it is, where they will go, but I know that is a part of my end of life planning, is finding the very best place so other people can get joy from these toys.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, none of it's easy. If you're of this ilk, and if you're listening to Star Wars podcast, you are of this ilk in some way, shape or form, or even t-shirts are sometimes harder to get rid of than you think, because it's not just that it says Star Wars. It's that you had it in a certain point in your life or received it in a certain point in your life, or it's a Brian Ward original and you don't want to get it.
Exactly. Exactly. And it is so hard to predict. I think that's part of the addiction to collecting, mm-hmm. or the fun of it, is it's hard to predict what is going to have more different meaning as time and life go on. You know, something that seems really, really like this is silly, and is something to just, you know, it's just marketing. I found that Attack of the Clones cereal box that I've been saving for 2002. It's got the kind of weird holographic quality that's got Obi-Wan and Jango on it. And I've mentioned it mm-hmm. before on the podcast, and other people have, listeners have kindly tweeted, like, you mean this one? And sent me pictures of it. And it's like, yes. And I think I still own it. And I found it this weekend. And it's great. And a cereal box, right? That seems so temporary and silly. Like, it's a box for food. Open it and eat the food. And I discovered that there's not cereal in it. I ate the cereal. but that box, like, I don't know. It just continues. It's not the thing that I would have thought is like, if I saved one thing from Attack of the Clones era merchandising, it might be this cereal box. You never know.
Yeah. Yep. So true. Yeah.
All right. Any other thoughts on this? Great question, Ken.
No, other than I have a date with my storage shed soon. Like, I know I have to get out there and really start looking at what I want to do with some of it, and not because I'm planning for leaving this mortal realm, but just like I've been saying to myself, like, I really need to see what's in there and remember what's there, and then maybe I can make a determination of what will go. So yeah, it reminds me to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we can keep talking both on air and off about how to handle our collections. With that, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back for some more Jawa talk and more in just a moment.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we are back to continue answering questions of the Force using our souls and the internet to attempt answers to the questions of the Force. We're going to our patrons from Patreon. We have a great question here from Maddie Gunner. It's time to get into Tika. Maddie says, what do you guys think happened to Tika after Obi-Wan left to save Leia? Ken, I think we both probably have some deep Tika headcanon. So what is yours?
First of all, Maddie's, we got to spend some time with Maddie at Star Wars Celebration. He's from London. He's in a like a heavy metal band called Mourner. He's a great, you can want to talk music with him. He's your guy. So Maddie, thanks for this question. I love Tika, by the way. I think I'm going to have talking about collecting. I think that Tika Black Series is got my name on it. Just love Tika. I really do. So, you know, there's the immediate idea, right? Like what happens like that week, and there might be a little bit of shady activities from Tika. Like, well, those look like Kenobi's back. I'm going to take some of these parts back and resell them to him. He is a bit of a scoundrel, but a lovable one. I jump into the end of my daydream of Tika. I envision a long, healthy life for Tika. And he didn't get caught up with the tragedy around the Lars droids, even though we were joking about him maybe being involved earlier. I think he may have got tired of the nomadic life, set up a shop in Mos Espa, and become one of the more successful Jawa junk traders. And that almost like it's a little bit of a pawn shop, a little bit of Pawn Stars Tika here. He was a different kind of Jawa with a different view on how to do things.
Not to just conflate all Jawa narratives into one story, but yeah. Tika with such short screen time truly captured our hearts. I have a Tika 3¾ action figure coming eventually that I pre-ordered. Ooh, yeah. So is there any possibility that Pelimoto dated Tika?
Yes. And are you suggesting that that's who she's referring to? Like, possibly. Is this a connected universe now shared? I mean, it's all connected. Universe. But yeah. But like a real beat for beat one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. Tika seems like he's such a charm to him. I could see him selling some parts and her saying, yeah, all right, let's go down to the bar and grill.
He stole the control board from Obi-Wan's moisture evaporator and briefly Peli's heart and returned them both damaged. Awful, awful Tika. I think to Maddie's actual question here, I really like the idea that, you know, that obviously we know that Tika raids the cave. So I'm sure he came back and he raided the cave to pull his stunt that he does. And maybe then came back again. Like he's not back at all.
Yeah.
And I think by the time that we get that great scene where Obi-Wan is packing up, I think he's missing a lot. I think Tika raided a lot, maybe as just being a Jawa and doing what Jawas do, but maybe out of just like, this is a way to like express concern.
Yeah. Yeah.
That Obi-Wan will come find me if I really take a lot for him, you know?
Like that.
And then I think there's at some moment, you know, that he comes back where Obi-Wan's packed up and the cave is empty. Right. And that's just like a little heartbreaking scene to me that Tika walks in with like a bunch of Obi-Wan stuff to resell to him. And Obi-Wan is just entirely gone. And that point, Does Tika go on a mission tracking Obi-Wan to his new hut? Like,
oh, yeah.
Months after Obi-Wan had set up shop, you know, I'm fascinated in A New Hope. Why Obi-Wan has a lot of stuff in his home. Is that all stuff that he's bought from Tika just to keep Tika thriving?
I think there's some, if we're looking at a season two in the great Tatooine House Hunters episode that we want, I absolutely think Tika tracks him down. That's a great idea. And then a lot of it, maybe including some of the more fabled Obi-Wan items, come from Tika and his junk sale.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Tika tracks him down and like, you are not escaping. You will purchase things from me, Ben Kenobi.
Yeah. Ben Kenobi's looking to move into a modest hut in Tatooine. We've got three houses picked out. Great.
Yeah. My final Tika headcanon is I think he actually like tells stories about Ben Kenobi, maybe songs to spread the myth. And I like the idea that maybe Tika wrote a song called The Jedi Who Smelled of Meat.
I forget he's such an insulting little jerk. But it's so fun. So fun.
It is so fun. So, yeah, I think Tika thrived in a lot of ways after Obi-Wan left the cave. Any other Tika thoughts, Ken?
No. The only thing that it makes me think of why I even like him more is, you know, their Jawas, we're just used to them in storytelling being in for lack of a better term, packs, you know, you see them, there's tight-knit community, especially even in Mandalorian Chapter 2, the great stuff of off-world Jawas, the patio up top, and even Pelimoto, there's two, she speaks of them as, you know, the Jawas, but Tika just stands alone to me, and I maybe there's a sandcrawler out back, and their friends are like, yeah, you go talk to the crazy old hermit, but I just think Tika just is a true individual, and that's what I love.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's what I love about that scene is Tika is fun and has personality, but there's also this great insight into Obi-Wan. We talked a little bit about, joked about how Tika is a personal shopper and is going to help Obi-Wan, you know, keep a low profile and all that too. But like, you know, Obi-Wan knows his name, right? It's the fact that they have a relationship and that there is respect and he isn't just a random Jawa. Like, they have a back and forth. Obi-Wan uses his name. Yeah. It's a really, really fun and rich scene that in so many ways, Star Wars has been doing this with, you know, all the people of Tatooine, fleshing them out. And I think Tika is a great step forward for Jawas across the galaxy of storytelling.
Yes. Love that.
Excellent. We are going to move on then to our final question here. Staying in the sands of Tatooine. That's just the way the questions happen to roll out this week. Our final question is from our patron on Patreon, Evan Osborne Lomax. Evan says, hello there, my friends. I have returned from the nether realm of the Force. I need some more Kleeglar's content. This man loved his wife, Shmi. Could you imagine the joy he would have upon the discovery that his late wife had a grandson? Me personally, I would like to see old Grandpa Kleeg bouncing baby Luke on his good knee. What say you, my friends? What Kleeg content do you desire? Ken, we're going to get into answering this question, but this is one where I did go to the internet for some confirmation, and I want to read some of this clarifying stuff about the journey of Kleeg Glars. Yeah. So according to reference materials from both the era of EU legends and in modern canon, the legends information comes from the Ask Lobot feature in the Star Wars Insider magazine. that in both of those eras, we learned that Kleeg died basically shortly after the events of Attack of the Clones as a result of the physical injuries from his encounter with the Tuskens. And also from a broken heart. Here's the passage that Wikipedia has that's under the canon tab. Kleeg was bereft at the loss of Shmi, while Owen barely contained his anger as well. Beru remained steadfast and continued the family's work with the White Sons, even as Kleeg and Owen dealt with the loss. After some time, Kleeg was determined to continue the life he had worked hard to create on Tatooine and began working to make the Lars homestead an oasis of security in the desert. But he quickly began to fade as the tragedy continued to weigh him down heavily. The once strong man became weak even as time passed since Shmi's death, and he died from the wounds he received from the Tuskens and of a broken heart not long after her death. Kleeg's body was, like Shmi's, placed in a coffin and buried next to hers. The Lars homestead was bequeathed to Owen and Beru, who married and sought to continue the family traditions. So... that's sad, right?
That's very sad. Very sad. Oh, man.
What's your emotional reaction to that? Were you aware of this, you know, at least currently canon timeline, that he was not alive to see baby Luke? And how do you feel about that?
I do remember coming upon that at some point. The details totally lost me. I really am glad that you... brought it down. Gave us the details. That's heartbreaking. That's heartbreaking. There's something I love about Kleeg, and I talk about some of the things that you know, he maybe could have changed. But I love his part of the Star Wars story. It's pretty key, you know, to the Skywalker family, what he did, and love and care and empathy and have him go before he gets to enjoy some of the stuff that came down the line. It is sad. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Klieg.
It's very sad, but it is. I also like there's the, you know, term on social media, which I'm a little conflicted by, of, you know, calling people like, oh, that's a wife guy. You know, somebody who's like really constantly talking about their wife, very much loves their wife. There's none of these like old school, you know, jokes about it being a headache to be married. It's just.
Right, right.
I just kind of like that Klieg is a wife guy.
Yeah.
He's just like, you know, if you have 5 minutes, I'd like to talk to you about Shmi, about how great my wife is. You know, I just love that part of the story, that not only did Shmi get out of the horrible life conditions that she experienced, but she got this time of just great happiness with Klieg.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, absolutely.
So with that in mind, let's actually answer Evan's question. What kind of Klieg content do you want to see?
So answering first, and just like what is possible versus some of the dream stuff if he sees Luke. And I'll say this up top, minus adult-themed activities, okay, I would like a short story about their first date. Like post she's freed, all the kind of stuff there, get kind of those logistics out of the way. And just kind of it celebrate them as I was going to say young love, but Klieg seems like he was born old. No disrespect to Jack Thompson, who played him. He played him wonderfully. It's just an old desert grump. But you make this like a real Disney Lady and the Tramp vibe type of story, whether it's a short story or a 1 hour movie. I don't know. So it's a romantic, romantic comedy over a shared plate of Tatooine pasta and Ronto meatballs. So I just kind of see how it plays out there, and just spend time in that, and spend time with Shmi's choices in that scenario, what she thinks about this and how, you know, her newfound freedom and what that means to her and what he means to her and his part in that. I think it'd just be real sweet. Younger Klieg and Shmi in love.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm really with you. We've got this book coming that is Han and Leia's honeymoon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I say let's follow that up with Klieg and Shmi's honeymoon, probably in Anchorhead, right? Probably not anywhere too terribly fancy. There's some great stuff about that in the Kenobi book of like what counts as a fancy date on Tatooine.
Yeah.
And where do you go for that? But I love the idea of, you know, that voice is so great of Klieg's, and just be like, oh, I don't have much, but I'd like to take you into Anchorhead. And the idea that this would be like kind of this meager honeymoon that Klieg can provide. And for Shmi, it's just, she's over the moon with this honeymoon. It's just quality time with a loving person. I would love that. And then this is a little twist. I feel like, you know, when they're having that real, like those get to know you conversations, this probably wouldn't be on the honeymoon, but the get to know you conversations.
Yeah.
When Shmi really opens up to Klieg and tells him about her son, Anakin, and brings up this Qui-Gon guy, I get the sense that Klieg would be jealous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and that they'd have to work that out, and Klieg would have to learn to not be jealous when she mentions Qui-Gon.
I agree with that. I am one who is, whether we're joking about it or exploring it seriously, I do believe that there was some heat between Qui-Gon and Shmi, and why wouldn't there be both ways?
It's the knowing looks and the kind resting of hands on shoulders. Yep.
Yes.
I'm here for that. That's fun to imagine. The getting to know you conversations going on. So yeah, I'd love in any way some more storytelling with Klieg and Shmi. I also would be really interested in, don't know where it would fit in, but like just kind of fun details of what does Luke know and think about Klieg? Right. There's that passage in Shadow of the Sith where with time and distance and perspective, Luke is realizing what is kind of beautiful about Tatooine, that he couldn't when it was just this rock that was far away from everything else that he wanted to get off of. So Owen, we know, is not probably the most emotionally open parental figure. Beru is certainly much better. So like, what do they tell Luke about Klieg? And, you know, could there be some, you know, Tales of the Jedi, like just short animated, episode of Luke being told about who Klieg really was.
That's a great idea because there's so many great things I think to take from Klieg, including empathy, action behind that empathy, and just a loving, supporting person, like you're saying, and a strength. I think anyone in Tatooine who survives long enough has a strength to them that should be celebrated. So there's a lot there. Sit down, little Luke. We're going to tell you about your grandpa.
Yeah. And just to tie it all up, I think Tika and Klieg probably knew each other, right?
Absolutely think so. And yeah. And I don't think a lot of Tika's stuff got over on Klieg. He knew the score.
Yeah, I can absolutely see a wacky comedy episode of the Klieg show where he's going to propose to Shmi and Tika tries to sell him just some junk ring. Like, this is not a real diamond, Tika, and I know
This isn't real. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want Shmi's finger turning green, Tika.
Yeah.
All right. Any final Klieg thoughts?
The only thing I was thinking is, like, look, if we do get to see, if we were able to see like a fantasy like story where we see him with Luke, which we know now not possible. I think that, again, there would be some sweetness to the moment. I agree with what Evan's suggesting here, that there'd be a very proud grandfather and really respecting that legacy of Shmi to the rest of the Skywalker family. I think that'd be very important. But I also would definitely want a scene where Beru has to pull Klieg aside and say things like, Klieg, we don't call Tuskens that anymore. Okay? I know what they did to Shmi, but times have changed. I don't say that. Yeah, I think it would be an important conversation to have with Klieg.
Yes, I think Beru would help Klieg gently get into the future.
be a little Archie Bunker type of atmosphere.
Yes. Maybe that is part of the reason I like Klieg. Watched All in the Family, that sitcom, quite a lot growing up. So maybe there is a little of that vibe.
Same.
All right. And with that, we are wrapping up. We have the last several weeks been doing the Power of the Light Side segment, where we share something from a patron on Patreon. Just something positive about Star Wars, a joyful moment, a positive way that the stories impact their lives or the way they process things, all that kind of stuff. If anybody is interested, any patrons who are listening, there's a post up on our Patreon page that is a call for entries for Power of the Light Side. So if you're interested, just scroll down a few entries and you will find one for Power of the Light Side. If we get more entries, we will share them here. So instead of sharing one, we are calling for entries. If you're interested, go ahead and write one. We would love to share it. Ken, with that, where can people find us?
Yeah, we are the Force Center Podcast Feed. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Look for a new live Q&A coming your way Friday, July 29th is what we're scheduled at, 4 p.m. Pacific. We'll update you on that and make it official with a tweet. But get ready for that. We have a lot of fun. You can ask us anything, interact with us live via chat. A lot of fun there. All on our YouTube page, you can subscribe there as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and more. Just search, you'll find us. We're also now on Podchaser, where you can find us through there as well. And yes, I said that as a Klieg Lars, not understanding exactly what Podchaser is yet. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter, and you can support us directly if you choose at patreon.com/ForceCenter. You can follow me at Ken Napsok or go to kennapsok.com and for all the things I do, including my music show, Pop Rock and Radio, or stand-up comedy, like a big show July 30th at Flappers in Burbank. Jake Lewis and Friends, fun show. Come on out. Joseph, where can they follow you?
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all of my other comedy adventures, my other podcast, Obsess, a book I wrote a while back called Comedy of Doom, if you're interested in that. All that stuff is on my website, including updates to live shows. I have one in Minneapolis at the Great Convention Convergence in August, so you can check all of that out on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for the selling ways of Tika, this has been Questions of the Force. We'll be right back.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.